Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/greek.
First of all, George Kotis, thank you very much. Welcome to SBS Greek.
It's very much my pleasure, Panos.
I want to start first with what happened in June. You got this award for the King's birthday. What is it about?
Obviously, that's a matter that wasn't in my hands. There were a lot of local people here that recognised the work that I'd been doing, just busily working away, doing what I was doing, and they felt it was significant enough to put forward the nomination. So I was totally unaware of it until such time as, a very short time before the award happened. Came out of nowhere for me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say this publicly, when the email came from the Governor General's office, I thought it was a hoax. I thought it was somebody having a joke, and I deleted it, Panel. I deleted it. And of course, they got in touch with me later and that was all resolved and they understood. But yes, this was a matter that other people to have me recognised. And that's a very, very humbling thing for anybody to have.
You might have deleted the email, but nobody can delete what you have done in the past four decades to protect the Port Hacking area. It's an area that it's outside of Sydney, yeah? And it's near the ocean. Is that correct?
In the southern suburbs of Sydney, it's a large estuary, but nowhere near as big as Sydney Harbour. And it has the Royal National Park on its southern border and the Sutherland Shire on its northern border. It's oceanic in that the tide comes and goes. It's a classic estuary in that it's got all the components that make an estuary important for the marine world generally. It's got mangroves, it's got seagrass beds, it's got a fresh water input, it's got little wetlands, salt marsh areas. It's a micro unit of all the things that are critical to a healthy marine environment. I moved to this area when my wife and I married in 1967, and up until then, if I can just backtrack a little bit and give this a context, I'm the son of immigrant parents. And of course, being up at Dunisia, of course, Thalassina was very, very important. When the Aussie kids were going to the beach, they were, playing in the surf. Barba Costi and my family would go to the rocky foreshores. And we would gather Ahinus, Dapodia, Amidia, Mitya, all of those things. And that fed my curiosity. It fed our tummies deliciously with these treats, but it fed my curiosity. And of course, in those days, Anglo-Australians were disgusted that people could even consider eating these things. I was always drawn to this because of the immigrant ways, what they sought to complement, the food that they could buy. In those days, you couldn't buy those things, Bun. And when we married, we came down to Port Hacking, and here's this marine wonderland. So my curiosity about these things that live in the sea that we harvest or we don't harvest or whatever, it was just a matter of evolution, I think. But it also coincided with me meeting people who were involved with the bush. They bushwalking, they knew their native flora. And so this was a new world of education for me, the natural world. But, of course, being drawn to the water, that's where my interest evolved. My Greek heritage, I think, was an intrinsic part of my evolution into this sort of area and the work. Mm-hmm. I cannot separate the two.
We need to say here that your family is coming from the island of Castellorizo, correct?
Castellorizo, yeah. My father came in 1923 with his family, and my mother's father came in about 1918. They were all from Castellorizo. My family name is actually Papakotis. As things were very difficult at the time I started school, I didn't speak English, and things weren't easy for people of our origin. My parents made a conscious decision to make the name a bit easier. We regret these things now, but that's the way things were. My mother's family name was Pitsikas. They weren't easy times. But anyway, that was then, so here we are.
You've been an activist for many years trying to protect what is happening there. Do you think we need to be involved with the activism today because the governments, the local governments, are not doing enough?
My work in Port Hacking has had two faces. The local council advertised for citizens to form an advisory body with the purpose of preparing a management plan for the waterway. And I thought this suited me. So in the first instance, I wasn't an activist. I was engaged with a view to planning for the betterment of the place. And over time, I was involved with the preparation of two management plans. But in the early days, something happened that brought out the activist in me. The state government wanted to introduce a very large engineering works within Port Hacking, which would have changed significantly the characteristics of the place. It would have altered the water dynamics. It would have had an impact on the natural beauty of the place. So that brought out the activist in me, and that wasn't a sole job. It, you know, we were able to marshal a fair bit of public response. Mm-hmm. At that stage, I was wearing two hats. I was working in the strategic sense to prepare plans to better manage the place, but by the same token, things were happening that needed an activist response. Mm-hmm. I had a foot in both camps, and that's been, for my own purposes, a very healthy thing. It's kept me honest because, you know, you never want to dilute your core values. Mm-hmm. By the same token, everybody benefits by taking a strategic view of things, mm-hmm. of devising plans and strategies that manage all the loads of a metropolitan population. Mm-hmm.
You've been active so many years. Have you come across with local Aboriginal leaders? And how do you think the Indigenous Australians can assist us with preserving and protecting our environment?
It's been important that I have been engaged, and I've done so in two ways. One is with the people here as far as the environment's concerned, but also where the artefacts are concerned. We've got a lot of artefacts here that are not conspicuous. The Aborigines have been here for 65,000 years. Over the last 20,000 years, the sea rose. So a lot of the coastal remnants of their existence around places, whether it be Sydney or Melbourne, whatever, mm-hmm. have over those 20 years become submerged. So a lot of the more obvious artefacts, they're still here, but they're more recent than those that are found, say, in the inland. So it's been important for us, particularly from a planning point of view, to recognise these locations, identify what's there, and you can only do that with the engagement of Indigenous people, and to build in whatever plans and strategies are needed to protect those. Now, we're very lucky here in that we've got some people with Indigenous people with an enormous depth of knowledge. So it's not just about the biological environment and the dynamics of the tides and all the things that happen with urban input, stormwater. It's about these other components which are critical to the enduring culture of the Indigenous people.
How do you think we can make the younger generation to be more involved with what's going on with the climate today, with the protection of the environment?
The work that I do here is local. However, it's impossible in recent times to isolate this big picture thing we call climate change from the local components. It's impossible to isolate the two. I'm not an expert on a lot of the detail in climate change, although what's made me very angry in more recent years, Panu, is that I went to my first lecture on climate change in about 1986 or 1987. And to be in a situation like we've been in the last 10 years, to have to try and justify this as a phenomenon has been very disappointing to people, not only like me, but in the scientific world. But you talk about the young people. As an activist, I've been given great heart about the future from the young people that I see. The young people, they understand, they engage. I've been to these rallies where the school children have been there in their thousands. We see young people like Greta Thunberg, whether you agree or like her, the thing is what she's done is that she's engaged young people in this matter. That's a good thing. Two dynamics happening. And unfortunately, the prevailing dynamic is those who hold the power, whether that's political power, industrial power, economic power, they're still calling the shots. But on the other side, we have that lovely enthusiasm that's been unadulterated by all these other things. Mm-hmm. They understand it, Panu. They get it. I'm involved in a youth development program through the Lions Club organisation. It's a leadership thing, and I'm so impressed with the quality of young people coming through, but importantly, their understanding of these things and about the future. The bottom line for me is that I'm a grandfather. I have beautiful young granddaughters, and I want the best for them. Now, my grandparents handed me a world where we could go down and we could harvest all of these things that I spoke about, and you could throw a line in and catch fish, and the waters were abundant. Now, mm-hmm. for a whole range of reasons, these things have changed. Population, the immense tread of a huge human footprint. But the young people understand, and one of the good things about awards like this is that it helps focus attention about these things. So I don't know how many people in my part of the world have been given this sort of recognition, but I've noticed since this award has been given to me, there has been a spin-off. People have been speaking to me about my work, people who previously had never engaged. Young people can give me a lot of hope.
And finally, I want to point out that while we're having this conversation, I'm in a small studio in a very urban area, and you are on your boat watching the ocean or wherever you are. How do you feel when you are in the nature? How important is that for you, sir?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. I'm in heaven on the one hand. It's just a beautiful place to be, and more often than not, I'm on my own. Sometimes over years, I've been with students. And that's also gives me great heart to be with young people who are using their eyes and their brains and working towards something in the future. But I feel blessed. At the same time, I see things that aren't right. How do I say this in Greek? Anepset, I light the fires and away we go. So, but would I want to be anywhere else than in a beautiful natural environment? No. Unless it's me Parea with Trapezi and all of that, Kebuzuki, that's another thing. One of the challenges we face, particularly around metropolises, but everywhere, is a phenomenon of entitlement. In other words, people buy a boat or have a dog or an SUV that can go into the bush, and there's now exploding sense of entitlement to run your dog wherever. On port hacking, we're holding on very tight to migratory shorebirds. They fly all the way from Siberia or Alaska, and they need rest and feeding to make the return trip. And we've got a dreadful problem here with people just letting their dogs chase these birds. It's illegal, but we don't, the local bodies. So there's this sense of entitlement. Well, my dog needs to run. And it's a modern phenomenon that I think is going to be very, very hard to rein in. And I label it, perhaps wrongly, I don't know, but it's a sense of entitlement. I've got my SUV, I can go out and churn up the environment. I can, you know, the genies are out of the bottle, and it's a challenge now to manage things when the people who are behaving like this are governed by this, well, I've labelled it a sense of entitlement. That's a problem, not just here in Port Hacking, but in a lot of places, I would guess, around the world.
George Kotis, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Panu, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you very much for the contact.
Κάντε like, μοιραστείτε, σχολιάστε, ακολουθήστε μας στο Facebook, στο SBS Greek.